As Professor Kennedy suggested, one of the issues is this, the change in the economic context and the political economic context in which services and public accommodations are provided in the welfare state and how that has been interpreted by the public. And we have two economists who have done a significant work on the issue of economic integration and fiscal impacts. James P. Smith, who's a senior economist at the RAND Corporation, the editor of the volume on the New Americans. Dr. Smith is, of course, a well-known economist who has done a significant amount of work on income inequality, immigration, economic impact of immigration. He's also one of the foremost authorities on the study of wealth in America, which he and I share an interest in. And the second speaker will be Stephen Trejo, who's an associate professor of economics at the University of Texas at Austin, and a former faculty member at UC Santa Barbara, where I teach at now. And his research focuses on public policies, issues involving labor markets, the experience of immigrants, and the obstacle to economic progress of minority groups. So I'm going to ask Professor Smith first, and then Stephen follow.
Thanks, Mel.
That's what I'm going to talk about.
So Jane Ross asked me to talk about the New Americans, brief summary of what we said in the New Americans 9 years ago, but also to do that in the context of what we would then want to do now that's different than that. What extensions would I recommend? And that's the format I'm going to follow in my talk. There were three issues that we dealt with in the New Americans. We were asked to, by the Barbara Jordan Commission, to estimate the impact that, that they felt there were things they didn't know from the scientific literature. And we were asked to estimate the impact of immigration on the future demography of the United States, and not just the total population, but the ethnic and racial distribution of that population, the effect of immigration on the fiscal effect of immigration, and the effect of immigration on the economy and the labor market. And so that's what we did. When we estimated the impact of immigration on the future size and composition of the population, what we built up a demographic model with all its complications, and rest assured, I'm not going to tell you anything about that. I'm just going to tell you the conclusion. But we took various scenarios of immigration, net immigration into the country. Our baseline scenario was to assume that the current level of net immigration to the United States when we did the study would remain the same, and that was 820 million per year. That's the baseline. And then we said, well, what if it was 50% lower or 50% higher, which I would say at that time we felt that would encompass all the possible changes that would take place. I think we might have been wrong on that. And then we just went to the extremes. Let's say it doubled, and let's say we, for some reason, which would be beyond me, we could actually stop immigration completely into the country. So this was our projection. At the baseline of this projection was 1995 and 263 million Americans. And the purple line and the one in the middle is what the baseline projection would be. So our projection was that given what was happening to mortality, given the fertility patterns in the United States, and given immigration, that the country was going to grow to 387 million by the year 2050. That's a growth of 120 million Americans. If there was zero immigration, the country still would have grown, and it would grow to 307 million Americans by the year 2050. So 80 million of the 120 million growth in population was due to immigration. People, new people coming into the country. So immigration was the major force in the population, in the future population of the United States growing. If you look at these, which I did when I prepared this talk, I looked and said, well, how did we do? It is 10 years ago. How did we do, like, right now, right? And we clearly underestimated what was happening, because we just passed $300 million recently, and these projections, our baseline projections, said that should have happened in the year 2012. So this is a National Academy study that was wrong, and I was the editor. So my own view of this now is that we shouldn't be, we're not really on the purple line anymore. We're actually on the green line, and we're going to grow to about 426 million Americans with current rates of immigration. What does the ethnic composition of the population look like? And again, the same color scheme. And you can see the non-Hispanic white population hardly changing at all. And the big changes are, not surprisingly, in the Latino population and the Asian population. The Latino population was going to grow from 26 million people. These are anyone who classifies themselves ethnically as Latino. They don't have to be first generation. Our baseline projection was that that would grow to 95 million Latinos by the year 2050. I think a better number now would be the green line, 113 million. And the Asian population would also grow. So these populations would essentially triple over the next 50 years until about in the year 2050, 38% of the American population call themselves either Asian or Latino, compared to about 13% right now. But, and this is a important but, often left out in the debate, in my view, but it's really important. Because that makes it sound like a bigger change than it really is. Because through the magic of relationships and marriage and having children and crossing endogenous marriages and all that, what we're going to end up with, based on the demographic realities, is a population that's multi-ethnic. And they may be calling themselves Latino, but only one of their parents is Latino. The other parent may be Irish. And the Latino identity dominates the Irish identity when people say what they are. But 44% of the Latinos will actually, who live in the year 2050, will actually be part non-Latino. And the same for Asians as well. So it's a very diverse society that way. So where would I go on the first thing we did? The first was projecting the demographic population of the United States. Would I recommend re-looking at it, another look at this? And as I said when I went through it, I think we clearly understated the changes were going to take place, that the 50% higher projection is actually what I would think is the right projection right now. The population is going to go faster than we said it and already has. The composition is going to change more than we said it would, and it already has, but we already have a projection in there. It would be also nice, and I'm going to come to this, it's going to be my theme, to know a lot more about undocumented immigrants and what their patterns are in terms of immigration, re-emigration back to the sending country, and how they differ from legal immigrants, because one of the fundamental changes that's taken place and it's accelerated since we did this report is a much larger representation of undocumented immigrants. So I think this would be a good thing to do, to re-examine and re-look at this issue, but I would not assign it high priority. The other two I would. So let's look at the impact on taxpayers. David Kennedy gave me a good entree into this, because this is indeed a way, this is taken from the New Americans, in which immigration is just vastly different than it was in the 19th century in terms of estimating its impact. The size of government, both at the federal level and the state and local level, is just much larger. You know, to speak about the fiscal impact of immigration in the year 1900 would be speaking about something that just fundamentally wasn't all that important. And now we have 38% of GDP spent by the government. So we're just talking about a vastly more important issue, and that was not true in the earlier waves of European history. And it's no surprise that contemporary discussions of immigration have this at the forefront, and if you look back in history, you don't see it. So we did a number of estimates of what the fiscal impact of immigration were. We took two randomly selected states. New Jersey and California. They had the characteristic of, you know, to speak about the fiscal impact of immigration, you actually like there to be some immigrants living in the state. So we took statement, which was a reasonably high representation of immigrants, New Jersey and California. And then we estimated for that year what the fiscal impact of immigration was and paying for the services and taking into account the taxes paid by immigrants. You can see that, in case you haven't noticed it before, California and New Jersey are not the same. There are more immigrants in California than there are in New Jersey, but more importantly, the types of immigrants are very different in the two countries. The ethnic distribution is actually not all that important. Obviously, there are more Latinos in California. What is important is immigrants in California have much lower incomes, and they're not all that different than the native-born population in New Jersey. And immigrants in California have a lot of kids relative to the native-born, and we'll see why that turns out to be important. But we went through the budgets of those two states in a single year and calculated what the cost was to a native-born household of having immigrants live in that state, in these two states. We went through all the programs, so that we didn't leave anything out. We went through federal programs, we went through state and local programs. And what we see here, and I've highlighted the three I actually want you to look at, what the benefits received by the native-born household per capita, the benefits received by an immigrant household per capita, that is, household headed by an immigrant, and the difference. So where immigrants really look good on the taxpayer effect is obviously anything related to benefits given to the elderly, because immigrants tend to be young, and the native-born household, native-born tend to be old. So if you look at something like Social Security, native-born households receive a lot more benefits than immigrant households, and so immigrants are a net plus in helping pay for that. The second thing I've highlighted is where a lot of the emotion and rhetoric is, and that's on welfare programs. And you can see that, yes, indeed, immigrants receive more, but we're talking about round-off error relative to everything else. It's just not enough money there to matter, so stop talking about it. The other place the money is obviously in the schools. And immigrants have more kids. They come from countries where fertility rates are higher. They mostly had these kids before they came here. Immigration does a lot of things. It's a very effective contraceptive, is the other thing we find, because their fertility rates decline very rapidly. But during that first generation, a lot more immigrants receive a lot more benefits from schools. So the two big things that show up here are the programs of the young, schools, and the programs of the old, which are Social Security and Medicare. And one of the differences in our system is the programs of the young are financed at the state and local level, and the programs of the elderly are financed at the federal level, and that's going to turn out to be pretty important. So this would be the average benefits received by immigrant households, how much they receive from all government programs, minus the taxes that they pay at the state and local level, and for these two states that we studied, New Jersey and California. And so let me do the California number. An average immigrant in California in that year received $3,463 more in benefits than they paid in taxes. One difference at the state and local level, especially in those years, is the budgets actually have to balance. So if they're receiving more benefits than they're paying taxes, somebody else has to be doing the opposite, and they are going to be the native-born households. So when you net them, and this is a number David Kennedy mentioned, and it's a 1995 number, in California, a native-born household paid $1,200 more in taxes than they received in benefits to pay for the surplus received by immigrants. That's not a small number. You know, it's not a surprise that the campaigns on this were in California. In New Jersey, it's trivial. $229 is trivial to me. And all the other states in the country are less than New Jersey. So there's one state where this is a really big deal at that time, and that state was California. And it's not a small effect at all. This number now, this was 10 years ago, given inflation, given the growth in immigrant population, expansion services, probably closer to $2,000 per household. That's the state and local. When you do the federal analysis, as I said, the programs at the federal level are for the elderly. It turns out to be positive, but it's also positive because one of the things we did in this panel is say, you can't just look at the first year, you can't just look at this year. What we have to do is see what the calculus gives you this year, the next year, the future. If people have kids, look at their kids, what they pay in, and do it over the entire future consequences of immigrants, add it all out, take the present value. And when you do that, immigrants actually turn out to be a net taxpayer benefit. And it's $80,000 over a long period of time. So the per year benefit isn't all that big. But they are a positive benefit to taxpayers, spread over a long period of time, but a deficit at the state and local level, especially in a particular state, and the one we're in right now. If there are a number of other calculations, I haven't gotten as much play, but if I do this also by, we looked at it, these numbers by age and by schooling, you can see if you really want to get, bring in immigrants, bring in college educated immigrants with no children. That is a bonanza. We should be drawing them in as much as possible. It's negatively related to schooling, so it's actually, the calculation for people who didn't have a high school diploma would be negative, including the federal level. And I bring that up because, and this is where I think we know very little now, and it's dominating the, it's very different than when we did the New Americans. We said almost nothing about undocumented immigrants and legal immigrants in that distinction because there wasn't any data to make that distinction. People were just foreign-born or not foreign-born. That's all we knew. The situation now is very, very different. We have a new immigrant survey that looks at legal immigrants in the United States. We have a lot more data than we did then. We can make distinctions that we couldn't make, and these distinctions are very important. So let me just talk about it. If I had to recommend a follow-on study, I would recommend a study that distinguishes between the undocumented and legal immigrants. So what do we know about the taxpayer effects of undocumented immigrants? And I would say an exaggeration would be to say we know very little, almost nothing. On the taxpayer side, we can make good, reasonable guesses. We know the immigrants, undocumented immigrants, have very low income, so they can't be paying terrifically high taxes. We know that some of it is off the books. Can't live in California without knowing that some of it doesn't show up with any taxes being paid at all. But some of the benefits may never be received, and Social Security benefits may never be received. But all of this is really kind of guesswork right now because we have no hard numbers about how important the off-the-books part on the income is, how important are these non-received benefits would be for the undocumented immigrants. We really do not know what the taxpayer effects will be. I'm going to tell you about a couple of recent studies that would point in a direction, but we have to know a lot more. One is a study I just did this 2 weeks ago, and it came out, on the healthcare cost of the undocumented. That, I don't know about the rest of the country, you read a lot about that in California, about what's undocumented immigrants showing up in the emergency rooms and stuff. So we did a study of how much it really costs to provide healthcare to non-elderly migrants of all types, but including undocumented migrants. The first thing that hits you, and it'll probably come up when Jose's talking later, is immigrants are really healthy. They are much healthier than the rest of us. They don't need to go to the hospital, most of them, because they are not sick. They are really, really healthy. And it's not just because they're young. Even if you control for age, they're a very, very healthy population. So we did a, our study said that for this population, people between the ages of 21 and 64 years old, we spend $429 billion. On the undocumented, from all sources, private, public, healthcare. The undocumented are $6 billion of that. The public cost of the undocumented is $1 billion. Okay, that's a pretty small number. That comes to $11 per American household. That seems to me not a big deal. I think I'm actually going to do okay on that. But, you know, keep in mind, you know. So now, let's go where I think there might be a big deal, and that's in education. So there are new estimates produced on the fiscal cost of education. I produced them 2 days ago, just to get a sense of what these numbers might look like. I am told by people who are education experts that the per year of schooling basically costs about K through 12, $7,000 per year. I am told by Jeff Purcell that there are 3 million children of undocumented migrants in this country who go to school. I can multiply. And I did. Though, if I multiply those two numbers together, I get $21 billion per year to provide schooling to children of undocumented migrants. That's 20 times larger than the number I just showed you for healthcare, to put it in perspective. That would come to about $250 per household in the United States, a much larger number. But that's not the way we provide education in the United States. We provide education at the local and state level. So on average, $250, I don't know if the large number or small number, it's some kind of number, but some communities may very well be a large number. And we want to know more about that. We want to actually get down to the state and local level. So I just said that. I would recommend doing this. So let me look at the last one, the effect of the economy on the labor market. And Steve is also going to, I looked at Steve's notes, and he's going to talk about something very different than I do. So that's good. The undocumented migrants are very different in terms of where they're coming from. We know they're largely Latin American and largely Mexican. They're also much lower skills. They have much less education than legal migrants who come into the country. This is data from the new immigrants survey that's being conducted now, random survey of new legal immigrants in the United States. So the average undocumented migrant that we had in this survey who had an income in the sending country of $7,500. Their income in the United States was $19,000. In case you're wondering why they came in the first place, you subtract those two numbers and you see a very large difference. Legal immigrants earn a lot more, but the gain to coming to the United States actually is higher for undocumented migrants than it is for legal migrants, and is quite substantial for both. This is what's happened, according to Jeff Purcell, to the fraction of recent migrants in the United States who are undocumented. In 1970, that was 5% of all recent migrants were undocumented. Now it's almost half. So that's another, I think, fundamental change in the history that David gave us a little bit. This is very different than what we used to have. This I won't get into because of the time constraint, except to say, because of the new immigrant survey, I know what the legal population looks like. And I know what the total population looks like, and I can subtract the two, and I'm now going to know what the undocumented population, without going to the arithmetic of this, let me just show you the result. One of the things that the economic literature has emphasized is that the skill or the wage difference between migrants and the native-born population has been expanding a lot, and this has been called the declining quality of immigrants in the United States. And you can see that by the blue line. This is the wage of migrants, the wage difference between migrants and the native-born population. It used to be 18%, and it bottomed out at 30%. It's a pretty substantial drop in the wage of migrants relative to the native-born population. But if you just look at legal immigrants alone and take out the undocumented migrants, you'd get the yellow line. That's what's happening to the wages of legal immigrants who come into the United States compared to the native-born population. It's actually going the other way. So all the characterizations that the labor economics literature has given about what immigrants to the United States look like is wrong if you're talking about legal immigrants. And so that we have two fundamentally different populations, and an average description of both is not a good description of either population. And let me finish with talking about, actually I thought David might mention this, and it's the one thing I'd add to them. I think the other ingredient that was critically important for the Europeans who came here was schooling of their children, and it provided the access to educational advances. So one of the things people, 5, 10 years ago, people were very pessimistic about the generational, including Latino scholars, about the progress of Latinos' children and grandchildren across the generations compared to Europeans. There was a lot of talk about progress stopping with the second generation because the countries were too close, the simulation wasn't occurring, that Latinos weren't going to share in this history of generational progress. I was skeptical about that, and so I looked at it more deeply, and these are the educational advances across generations by Europeans, descendants of European immigrants, and descendants of Latino immigrants. And if anything, the historical reality is actually the reverse. The Latinos have done much better across generations than the Europeans did.
What's on the vertical axis?
There are numbers on the vertical axis. No, it's the educational difference between the grandchildren and the immigrant. So 8 years, for example, if it's 8 years or 7 years, that would say the grandkids have 7 years more education than the first-generation immigrant. And so you can see the yellow, this is for men, yeah, the yellow lines are just always above the blue line. So the history, if history is a guide, Latinos have done very well across generations. But now we have a very different Latino population. We have a lot of undocumented migrants and as well as legal migrants, and this is women looking very much the same. It's not at all clear to me that I would be as optimistic about the generational progress of undocumented migrants as I am now about what's happened in the past for Latinos. So the other study, and I'll finish with this, that I would recommend is doing an in-depth study of the labor market, different labor market realities of undocumented and legal immigrants, and also finding out as much as we can about the generational progress of the large undocumented population in the United States.
Thank you.
I was too interested in it, so I had to let it in.
He was kind to me.
Yes. I actually allowed him to go beyond because I thought the last point was very important.